Let's go to Proverbs 1 and verse 11. Proverbs 1 and verse 11. So he said in verse 10, "My son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not." And then he goes on to say, "If they say, let us come with us, let us lay wait for blood, let us lurk privily for the innocent without cause." Now, being enticed to do something foolish or stupid is one thing. When people are coming to you and saying, let's lay wait secretly and kill people, that would probably be like, no, I think I'm hanging out with the wrong crowd here. I really need to examine my life. I need to get away from these people, right? And Solomon is here describing the nature of fallen, depraved men. Now, these men happen to be some, as I will get to in just a second, that they, this is basically, this would be what raw depravity is like. And this happens to be what we would all be like if it wasn't for the grace of God and the restraining hand of God. You see, these are sinners. Solomon said in verse 10, "My son, if sinners entice thee." But these are sinners who have not been saved by grace. See, we're all sinners. It says, "For all have sinned and come short of the glory of God." Solomon said in Ecclesiastes, "There's not a just man upon the earth that doeth good and sinneth not." So we're all sinners. But these are sinners who have not been saved by grace. And I can prove that to you by looking at verse 16. Proverbs 1:16, speaking of these same guys, it says, "For their feet run to evil and make haste to shed blood." Now, that verse might kind of put some, bring something to mind, and that would be in Romans 3:15. It sounds like similar language, and in Romans 3:15, Paul is quoting this verse, and he's using this verse as an example of the natural man, the man whom he says there in verse 10, Romans 3:10, "As it is written, there is none righteous, no, not one. There is none that understandeth, there is none that seeketh after God. They are all gone out of the way, they are together become unprofitable. There is none that doeth good, no, not one. Their throat is an open sepulchre. With their tongues they have used deceit, the poison of asps is under their lips. Their mouth is full of cursing and bitterness, their feet are swift to shed blood." This is what Paul's quoting here in Proverbs 1:16, "For their feet run to evil and make haste to shed blood." So this is an example. Paul's using this verse as an example of Jews and Gentiles all under sin. People who by nature want nothing whatsoever to do with God. They're spiritually dead. So therefore, it can be concluded that these conspirators here in Proverbs 1:10 through 19, they're not a rare exception to the generally good members of the human family. This is the norm. It's not the exception. If it weren't for God's restraining hand, then all of the reprobate that aren't saved by grace, they'd all be like this. They'd all act just like this. It says in Psalm 76:10, "Surely the wrath of man shall praise thee, the remainder of wrath shalt thou restrain." So God allows the wrath of man to do his purposes, right? He used the wrath of the Babylonians to destroy his people Israel, right? He used the wrath of the Assyrians to destroy the northern kingdom of Israel. So he does that. And he used the wrath of the Romans to destroy Israel later in 70 AD. And then the remainder of wrath he restrains. So God can use, it says in Psalm 17 that the wicked are his hands and his sword. So he can use men and use their natural tendencies, use what they want to do, and that is to go have conquest, to murder people, to kill people, to take them over. And he just steps back and says, okay, do what you want to do. And he uses them doing what they want to do to punish his people, right? So this is the norm. This is what all of us would be like if our wrath was not restrained, especially those who are not saved by grace, who don't have a new spirit within them. For a child of God with a conscience, it's difficult to imagine that there are men like this in the world who actually lay wait for blood and lurk privily for the innocent without cause. But such people are among us. There actually are people out there like that. Now, granted, there'd be millions of them if it wasn't for the restraining hand of God, but God does, for whatever reasons, known to him only, he does sometimes allow those types of people to be loose in society, and they do. I mean, there are murderers out there, and there are people that lay wait for the innocent. I mean, it's a horrible thing to think about, but it happens. They carry out their despicable deeds privily. It says, "Come, let us lay wait for blood, let us lurk privily for the innocent without cause." Privily is in a privy manner. not openly or publicly, secretly, privately, stealthily, or craftily. And this makes perfect sense. Sinners do their devilment in the darkness because they are darkness and they love darkness, right? Paul said in 2 Corinthians 6 and verse 14 that sinners are darkness themselves. Not only do they operate in the darkness, do they love darkness, but they actually are darkness. This is what we all were before we were saved by the grace of God through the blood of Jesus Christ. 2 Corinthians 6 and verse 14. Here, Paul is saying something pretty much like what Solomon is saying. Be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship hath righteousness with unrighteousness? And what communion hath light with darkness? Right? The unbelievers there are darkness. Right? When sinners entice thee, consent thou not. Right? Don't be unequally yoked with unbelievers, Paul says. So the unbelievers there are called darkness. And Jesus said that they love darkness. Look at John 3 and verse 19. John 3 and verse 19. It says, and this is the condemnation, that light is come into the world, and men loved darkness rather than light because their deeds were evil. They love their sin, so they love darkness. Right? Darkness covers their sin. It's a cloak for their sin. They don't like the light because the light reproves and makes manifest, Paul says in Ephesians chapter 5. It shows evil for what it is. They don't like the light. They like to stay away from it. They're like cockroaches. Sinners commit their sins at night when they can be concealed. And Peter said, remember in 2 Peter 3:10, he said that the day of the Lord would come as a thief in the night, right? So he's using the principle there of surprise. Basically, thieves come in the night because in the night they can come unawares. And he's saying that the day of the Lord, the coming of the Lord, not that the Lord's a thief, but the Lord is going to come as a thief. Like, you're not going to know when he shows up. This is what evil men do. They do things at night. 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 7, Paul says that that they that are drunken are drunken in the night. 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 7. For they that sleep, sleep in the night, and they that be drunken are drunken in the night. And I don't know, I don't know if this has something to do with why kids usually like to stay up really late, and the older you get, some people are night owls, and I'm not saying be a night owl is a sin or anything like that, but it is interesting that when you're young, you like to stay up late, you like to go out late, you like to do things late at night. Why? Because that's when sin takes place. When you get older, at least this has been my experience, when I was younger, to be caught on a Friday night at home at 9 o'clock, be like, you are such a loser. I remember thinking this years ago whenever I was back from overseas, I was living by myself, and it's a Friday night, and it's 9 o'clock at night, and I'm just sitting there reading or doing something, getting ready to go to bed, and it just dawned on me, wow, I mean, I would have considered myself the biggest loser ever just a few years ago to be at home on a Friday night doing nothing, right? Or getting ready to go to bed at 9 o'clock. But, that's what happens whenever you're changed and you don't want to be out partying with your friends and getting drunk and doing other horrible things. But sinners, they like to do that. Did I ever read the verse? I don't think I did. Did I read it? 1 Thessalonians 5:7. For they that sleep, sleep in the night. Yeah, and they that be drunken are drunken in the night. You don't know very many people that are drunk in the day. And if they are, they're alcoholics, right? So the average person likes to go tie one on, it's at night, right? He's not doing it in the morning, typically. Deeds that must be done in secret are usually evil. Ephesians 5 and verse 12. Chances are, if you have to do it under a cloak of secrecy, it's probably not something you should be doing. And it's not a universal rule. I mean, there were things that you might want to do where you didn't want anybody to know about it, and wouldn't be wrong. But typically, when groups of men get together and they start planning and scheming and they're doing things in secret, chances are they're probably not doing a good thing. Like Jekyll Island in 1911 or 12. I'm not sure exactly what year it was that they met, but they met there. These guys met which is an island off of Georgia, and they met there to formulate what would then become the Federal Reserve system. And the guys from Morgan and Rockefeller and Warburg and some of these guys, anyway, they all got together under a cloak of secrecy. Nobody, they were supposed to be going on some hunting trip or something, and they all go out there to this island and they plan the whole Federal Reserve system. And then they bring it back, and then they start working on senators and working on newspapers to start trying to promote this and get the public, you know, in favor of it and all this stuff. But it was done in secret. It came out later, years later, they found out about all the, there's been books written about it. There's a book written, The Creature from Jekyll Island by Edward G. Griffin. Yeah, where that's well known. I mean, that's not even conspiracy stuff anymore. That's just a well known, you can look that up anywhere. It's a well known fact that that happened. But I would say, oh yeah, Ephesians 5:12, I didn't get to that verse. For it is a shame even to speak of those things which are done of them in secret. There's some things that are just even wicked to even think about. The thought of foolishness is sin, we're told in Proverbs. And I think about Freemasonry. It's done in secrecy, right? You ever see a Masonic building, a Masonic temple? You notice one thing missing from the building? Windows. There are no windows. And if there are windows on the front, it's only of the little vestibule area. But there are no windows into the room where they meet. I've been in a Masonic temple before, believe it or not. I have sat in the Grand Master's, the Grand Master, Worshipful Master's chair, believe it or not.
Oh my.
I didn't even know what the Masons were at that time. I thought they were just like some kind of a, I don't even know what they were. Here I am, I'm with this guy, I'm sitting in the Worshipful Master's chair, and I turn around and say, what's this Masonry stuff about anymore? It's like the Mafia or something? Oh no, it's a, you know, philanthropist organization, and we do things for kids and blah blah blah. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. And I didn't know anything. I knew nothing about nothing. Here I was sitting in the Masonic. I mean, there was no meeting going on. It was just he had a key to the place. He was the past master. He was a worshipful master in the lodge. And he was then retired, I guess you would call that. They call him the past master. But anyway, yeah, 32nd degree Mason. Crazy. He didn't try to recruit me, which is interesting. But anyway, I was young back then. I was only probably 20 or something. But anyway, yeah, interesting experience. But it's a shame to even speak of things that are done of them in secret. If there was nothing wrong with Masonry, they wouldn't be doing it in secret. They wouldn't drown people in Lake Erie for exposing the first 3 degrees like they did to Captain William Morgan back in the 1800s. And that's another story, but that's an interesting one too. But anyway, thank God that we were sometimes darkness and are now light in the Lord. Ephesians 5 and verse 8. It says, for ye were sometimes darkness, but now are ye light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. So Christ has made us light in the Lord, and then he tells us, walk like it, act like it, right? If sinners entice thee, consent thou not. If they say, come with us, let us lay wait for blood, let us lurk privily for the innocent without cause, don't do it for goodness sakes. Now these reprobates here, these ones that lay wait for blood and lurk privily for the innocent, they would be classified as psychopaths today. This would be pretty much textbook psychopathy. Is that a word? Psychopathy, I think. Psychopaths show no empathy for their fellow man, even for those they know to be innocent. For a psychopath, and people throw that term around, like they just, somebody they don't like or something, they call them a psychopath. But a psychopath, by definition, is somebody who shows no empathy. They don't have normal human emotion. It's hard to get close to them. Some of them will act very charismatic just to get close to you to accomplish whatever they want to, but they don't have normal human emotions. And to them, I mean, to kill an innocent person wouldn't matter to them. If they did that, they wouldn't feel bad about it. They would have no remorse. That's what a psychopath is. Paul talks about people like this. Their consciences are seared with a hot iron in 1 Timothy 4 and verse 2. Thankfully, there's not a ton of them out there, but there are people like this out there. 1 Timothy 4:2, speaking lies and hypocrisy. This is in the latter days when men depart from the faith, giving heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of devils, speaking lies and hypocrisies, having their conscience seared with a hot iron. That's these types, right? That would lay wait for the innocent, knowing that they're innocent, and would just be like, yeah, let's kill them. Let's take their stuff. Because that's the next verse Solomon goes on to tell us, that they're doing it to take their stuff, right? Just murder people, just to have their stuff. They target the vulnerable without cause, They don't feel any pricks in their stony hearts, and they derive pleasure by it. Hopefully none of us ever meet somebody like that. I don't want to meet somebody like that, because a lot of times you don't know, unless you're really keen on these things, you might not know a psychopath whenever you meet one. He may seem like a really nice guy. So you always want to have your antenna up, just not to be paranoid, but you know, if somebody seems too good to be true, maybe they are, you know, just might want to be a little bit careful. If he starts talking about, hey, come with me and let's murder somebody, yeah, that's probably about the time where you say, let's not be friends anymore. So when a young man or any man comes into contact with someone possessing these wicked tendencies, he most certainly must steer clear of them completely. And this is what Solomon tells his son to do there in Proverbs 1 and verse 15. Proverbs 1, 15. My son, walk not thou in the way with them. Refrain thy foot from their path. So the thing is, if this type of thing never happened, Solomon wouldn't certainly take, what, 9 verses of these precious Proverbs to talk about it, right? I mean, this is stuff that actually happened. So it may seem like, oh, this is crazy. Why are we even talking about this? But, you know, you just never know.